I'm Tom Hall. Merry Christmas and welcome to Maryland Morning. On this Christmas morning, how about we take a break from reporting and analysis, and instead, let's listen to a little music and hear some poetry of the season. On December 2nd, the Baltimore Choral Arts Society performed Christmas with Choral Arts at the beautiful Baltimore Basilica. This morning, we'll listen to a few selections from that concert. We'll hear a couple of poems, and Rafael Alvarez will share with us a Christmas story called Aunt Lola. Rafael has read Aunt Lola on The Signal for the last 10 years, with The Signal on hiatus this season. We're happy to honor that WIPR holiday tradition here on Maryland Morning. I'll also speak to my good friend and neighbor, Kafi Garris from Reservoir Hill, about how her family will celebrate Kwanzaa when it begins tomorrow. We'll have a Gil Sandler story and the music, poetry, and stories of Christmas and Kwanzaa. That's all coming up after these headlines.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Morning, everybody, and thanks so much for joining us for this special holiday edition of Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall, and on behalf of Nathan, myself, and all of us on the Maryland Morning team, we wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and all the best in the new year. As promised, I'd like to begin this morning with an excerpt from a concert I conducted earlier this month with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. Here's an ebullient setting of an ancient Latin text, Gaudete, by the English composer Bob Chilcott. Music of Bob Chilcott here on Maryland Morning, Gaudete, performed by the Choral Arts Chorus and Orchestra in a live recording from the Baltimore Basilica that was broadcast here on WIPR back on December 2nd. We are foregoing our usual coverage of news and current events on this Christmas morning in favor of hearing a little music and enjoying a little poetry of the season. Here's producer Rob Sivak reading a fun poem by Philip Appleman called Karma, Dharma, Pudding, and Pie.
O karma, dharma, pudding, and pie, give me a break before I die. Grant me wisdom, will, and wit, purity, probity, pluck, and grit. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, kind, give me great abs and a steel-trap mind. And forgive, ye gods, some humble advice. These little blessings would suffice to beget an earthly paradise. Make the bad people good, and the good people nice. And before our world goes over the brink, teach the believers how to think.
Karma,
on 88.1. Thanks for being with us for this special holiday edition of Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. We're sampling a few recordings from a live performance I conducted earlier this month with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. That was John Rutter's setting of I Saw Three Ships. Here's another poem. It's one of my favorites, and it's been part of my family's Christmas tradition for many years. My wife, Linnell Smith, is the granddaughter of the poet Ogden Nash. When she was a little girl on Christmas Eve, Mr. Nash would read a poem by Rudyard Kipling. Linnell and I have been married for 29 years, and every year at our house on Christmas Eve, my mother-in-law, Mr. Nash's daughter, who's also named Linnell, continues this tradition and reads this same poem. It's a wonderful part of Christmas for Linnell and me and for our daughter, Miranda, and I'm delighted to share it with you this morning. This is Eddie's Service. Eddie, priest of St. Wilfrid, in his chapel at Manhood End, ordered a midnight service for such as cared to attend. But the Saxons were keeping Christmas, and the night was stormy as well. Nobody came to service, though Eddie rang the bell. "Wicked weather for walking," said Eddie of Manhood End, "but I must go on with the service for such as cared to attend." The altar lamps were lighted, an old marsh donkey came, bold as a guest invited, and stared at the guttering flame. The storm beat on at the windows, the water splashed on the floor, and a wet, yoke-weary bullock pushed in through the open door. How do I know what is greatest? How do I know what is least? That is my father's business, said Eddie, Wilfrid's priest. But three are gathered together. Listen to me and attend. I bring good news, my brethren, said Eddie of Manhood End. And he told of the ox of a manger and a stall in Bethlehem. And he spoke to the ass of a rider that rode to Jerusalem. They steamed and dripped in the chancel. They listened and never stirred, while just as though they were bishops, Eddie preached them the word. Till the gale blew off on the marshes and the windows showed the day, and the ox and the ass together wheeled and clattered away. And when the Saxons mocked him, said Eddie of Manhood End, I dare not shut his chapel on such as care to attend. A spiritual arranged by Alice Parker, a terrific composer who just celebrated her 90th birthday. That was the Baltimore Choral Arts Society singing He is King of Kings in a live concert at the Baltimore Basilica recorded earlier this month. I conducted this excerpt from Christmas with Choral Arts. By the way, today at noon, WMAR Television, ABC2, will broadcast that entire concert if you're interested in checking it out. I want to let you know about an event taking place next Thursday night, New Year's Eve, at another one of Baltimore's beautiful churches, St. Ignatius Catholic Church. They will once again host the annual New Year's Eve Interfaith Prayer Service. This is the 23rd year they have had this service. It starts at 7:30. There will be lots of great music and people from all faiths coming together to pray for peace in 2016. Thanks again for spending part of your Christmas with us this morning. Coming up after a break for news, the Baltimore writer Rafael Alvarez shares a Christmas story with us, and Kafi Garris tells us how she and her family celebrate Kwanzaa in their home in Reservoir Hill. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our audio archives there and learn more about what you just heard, or even make a pledge to support local programming. Again, that's at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, back to the show.
Thanks for joining us for this special Christmas edition of Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall here with Nathan Sterner, and we are delighted that you're spending part of your Christmas with us. For the last 10 years, one of our sister programs here at WIPR, The Signal, has at this time of year broadcast a Christmas story by local writer Rafael Alvarez. The Signal, of course, is on hiatus this season while producer Aaron Henkin works on a series of specials called Out of the Blocks and Lisa Morgan works on other projects. But we wanted to keep the tradition of broadcasting the story alive, so now it's our pleasure to present Rafael Alvarez reading Aunt Lola.
The gate to Aunt Lola's yard hung limp on broken hinges, closed with a piece of rope. Basilio let himself in from the alley and walked over cracked concrete to her back door. It was nearly dawn on Christmas Eve, stars fading into a gray, cloudy sky, a sea bag full of gifts on his shoulder. He paused before knocking, staring in as Lola moved around the kitchen in her housecoat, sipping coffee. She didn't hear him when he rapped lightly, so he watched a moment more, looking at post-war metal cabinets thick with brown paint and wrinkled decals of horses, an old Oriel stove, a tank without a thermostat, next to a top-of-the-line Kenmore fridge, a morning gift from Lola's kids when their father had passed away the year before. On the wall, next to a one-week-left-in-the-year calendar from Our Lady of Pompeii, a studio portrait of the original Bombacci sisters, Mary, Stella, Anna, Francesca, and Amelia, unsmiling in old country sepia before dispersal to orphanages, servants' quarters, and inevitably, America. During the Great Depression, when being poor meant nothing more than not having money, the sisters had populated the alley with children, a score of first cousins that included Basilio's father, son of Francesca, and Lola, daughter of Anna. Basilio and Lola, whom he called aunt out of respect, they were the only ones left in the 600 block of South Macon Street. The rest were dead or scattered in a grass-is-greener hopscotch that began in an alley once known for homemade wine and rose bushes, before skipping out to Dundalk and then Rosedale and White Marsh, and now out to the godforsaken, subdivided pastures of Harford County. The family would be celebrating Christmas Eve out there, all except Lola and Basilio. Lola's children had tried for a year to get her out of the house to no avail, and Basilio, who made ends meet painting pictures of seafood on the sides of refrigerated trucks and didn't own a car, sure wasn't hiking out to Falston just for dinner. Lola came to the door and pulled the curtain, her face creased with lines that he'd drawn 1,000 times over. Lola squinted, recognized him, and unlocked the door as he plucked something from his bag, the satchel immediately lighter by half. "Hey, hon," said Lola. "What you doing up so early?" "Giving out presents," he said, stepping into the warmth of fresh coffee, dishwater, and oil heat, holding a heavy, long-handled cookie iron in front of her. "This one had your name on it," he said. In the long moment that Lola puzzled over the well-worn contraption, Basilio realized he hadn't been a boy for a very long time. "What is it?" Lola asked. "What is it?" Lola felt around on top of the washing machine that stood between the door and the sink and found her eyeglasses. "Good God," she said. "I ain't seen one of them in many a year." As she poured coffee for him, Basilio opened the flat jaws of the Pizzelle iron to show what was engraved there. The miraculous medal of Our Blessed Mother on one side and a busy weave of diamonds on the other. Miraculous. A floral M in a constellation of petitions. The initial interwoven with a cross surrounded by 12 stars. He set the iron across the newspaper on the table, yesterday's headlines confirming his cynicism, and looked around the spotless row house. Aunt Lola didn't have a tree, but carols were playing on a plastic AM radio, and she taped Christmas cards to the spokes of the banister in the middle room. "What the hell am I going to do with a Pizzelle iron?" she said. "Hang it on the wall?" And just before Basilio could say that that wasn't such a bad idea, before he could say that, something better occurred to him. "I don't know, hon," said Aunt Lola. "How hard can it be, Aunt Lola?" "I turned many a Pizzelle iron," she said, "but one of my cousins picked up on the recipe, not me." "No one wrote it down?" "Didn't have to, so nobody did." "We can do it," he said, drumming his fingers across the plastic tablecloth. "Eggs, sugar, flour, and butter like anything else you make." "Got plenty of sugar," she said, "but baking powder, baking soda, I don't keep that stuff around anymore." "Well, the store does," said Basilio, getting up to peek in the fridge, empty except for a small carton of milk, a jug of water, and two meatballs and a dish of tomato sauce. "There's some vegetable oil in the cabinet," she said, "but the main thing is the anise," said Basilio. Lola moved to a roll-top hutch, Pennsylvania Dutch stenciling on the lacquered wood, and found a crusty brown medicine bottle, bone dry. "Don't let 'em give you extract. It's 2 weeks," she said, handing him the bottle. "Oil of anise, same as what you're holding there." Lola went for her change purse, but Basilio was already at the door. "Be right back," he said, picking up his sea bag on the way out the front. On the street, he counted the houses as he passed them and remembered who used to live there. Mr. Kugler, the German, who made beer in his basement, put on lederhosen to hike in Patterson Park, and was head chef at the bottle cap factory down by the railroad tracks when it employed more than 1,000 people. Miss Helen, a tough Polish lady who shucked oysters in cold packing houses on Boston Street. She worked as hard as any man and would tell you without being asked. "We didn't have no women's lib in them days. We just worked." His grandparents' house in the middle of the block, where on a Christmas Eve 40 years earlier, Basilio had lost a flying beetle doll, John. Lost him above these tarred roofs, a toy enjoyed for a moment before it disappeared into the cold night sky. And how he'd cried. 2 blocks up, he hit Eastern Avenue and turned left toward the old Chessie underpass, built in 1930 when the factory was supplying millions upon millions of crimped, cork-lined crowns to bottlers around the world. A train rolled by as he walked beneath a trestle, and he stopped to absorb the feel of it, remembering stories of Depression-era kids being sent to pick up loose coal to throw in pot-bellied stoves, cheap coal that burned dirty, and every now and then blew up a house. The train passed, and he moved into the Highland Town shopping district, reaching into his bag to give away a baseball cap, the mighty orange cartoon bird, freshly laundered and smiling, to a boy young enough to be happy about it. He gave a repaired rosary to a Salvadoran woman pushing a stroller with 2 kids in it, and he laid a little holiday Feliciano on her, and she smiled. He unloaded everything he had in the short walk to Di Pasquale's, near the corner of Golf and Conkling. Sometimes during this annual ritual of passing out unwrapped oddities that people would have stepped over if they hadn't been presented as gifts, he'd see the very thing he'd given away, a plastic action figure or a ball with a few bounces left in it, a redistribution of something more impossible than wealth. He'd see it lying in the gutter alongside the spot where he'd just offered it. At Di Pasquale's, around the corner from Zanino Funeral Home, where his grandfather had been laid out, Basilio ordered a double espresso from the girl behind the deli counter and drank it down. His duffel no longer a St. Nick's sack, but a grocery bag, as he grabbed what he needed. At the register, he took out the anise bottle and asked if they could refill it for him, the way Lola said they did back when you got anise at the pharmacy. Studying the bottle like an Indian arrowhead, the cashier chuckled and handed it back to him, along with a plastic bottle of anise, just as small, marked $5.95. In Basilio's wake, someone was buying ricotta, and someone was getting hauled out to a hearse. On an opposite corner, Mr. Stan Schneider was selling last-minute inventory at his custom foam shop, pierced hearts and holly for the cemetery, and twinkling lights for fake trees. One goes out, and the whole string goes out. "Got it," said Basilio, walking back into Lola's house without knocking. The kitchen table was covered with wax paper, and an empty aluminum spaghetti pot sat on the counter. Aunt Lola was leaning up against the washing machine, counting on her fingers. "I think I got it, too," she said. "It'll all come back to me when I start making the dough." She cracked a half dozen eggs into the pot and tossed everything else in after them, pouring out a couple of tablespoons of the anise oil, Basilio holding the pot steady as she leaned over it with an electric mixer, the beaters nicking the edges. And then she took a dab of the dough and fashioned a small cross from it, sticking the icon to the back of the stove where they'd see it as they worked. "My mother always did that," she said. "For luck, I guess." Basilio turned a knob on the stove and put a match to the front burner. The oven is old as the railroad underpass, bought at Bulwicki's and in the house for years before Lola moved in on her wedding day. The iron lay over the open flame. "Good and hot," said Lola. "It's got to be good and hot." And soon she was dropping small balls of dough between the scored jaws of the iron. The first few were pale prototypes, trial and error, and an almost good one for every three that weren't right at all. "Let me try," said Lola, taking the iron and dipping under the weight of it. "My God, it's heavy." Basilio held her wrists in his hands. They were soft and pudgy like the dough, and he helped her turn the iron. They made a keeper and flipped it onto the wax paper, the cookie flat and crisp and light brown around the edges, the M of Mary raised in perfect legibility. Lola had been up since 3 that morning, and she couldn't get back to sleep, but she was tired now. "I'm going to rest my eyes a little bit," she said, moving to the couch in the front room. "Just a couple minutes." And a couple minutes was all it took for Basilio to get the ambidextrous hang of making the cookies by himself, as though the iron and the dough were brushes in his hand. Open, plop, squeeze long enough to say a Hail Mary, turn the iron, sing a verse of God Only Knows by the genius Brian. Open, pluck, repeat, 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 as Aunt Lola breathed in the warm aroma, the licorice scent of the anise perfuming her dreams. Awake, we recognize and remember the mystery of more than 10,000 smells through 1,000 genes and 1,000 receptors. They come together the way letters form words, and words make sentences. Asleep, this gift multiplies, and the receptors that told Lola Pete Sells were piling up in the kitchen had bonded in her heart into the shape of a teardrop. Science promises that in the future, smell may be restored to those who've lost it, a day when appetite, fear, and longing will be given back to people unable to follow their nose. But until that day, 2 dozen Pete Sells on the kitchen table, 3 dozen, 4. As pictures moved in Lola's gray head, glimpses of the trucking company at Foster and Oldham when it was a pasture, the day when her mother unwittingly burned up the rent money by hiding it from her husband in the oven, Basilio turned the iron and stared out into the alley. Out there in the weeds and the litter and the dog crap, he saw the days when he'd be taken into small, dark bedrooms crowded with heavy furniture and crucifixes. Crucifixes large enough to be planted on Calvary, vanity tables turned to altars for sick old ladies as the Bombacci sisters fell away, one by one. He never remembered their names. He could never tell the difference between Aunt This One and Aunt That One, the room smelling of death and noxzema, as the aged brushed their hair below 3D collages of the Sacred Heart, frames of bleeding butterfly wings that scared and transfixed a boy no taller than the post at the end of the bed. "Come here, kid," they'd say in broken English. "Come here. Let me look at you." For taking 5 small steps from the foot of the bed to the head with a little nudge from behind, for letting his cheek be touched, Basilio would get a quarter. Remembering what a long, hard road those 5 steps had been, he decided that when Lola woke up, they would retrace them together. And when she did, she found the table crowded with cookies, the aluminum pot rimmed with crusts of dried dough soaking in the sink. "Good Lord, how long was I sleeping?" she said, nibbling the edges of a pizzelle. "And what are we going to do with all these cookies?" "Give them away," said Basilio. "Sounds good to me," said Lola. "I slept good." They packaged the cookies in tins Lola found in the basement, dusty things that were once packed with Getz's caramel creams, SK sausage, and Utz potato chips, old drums that she rinsed out and layered with the last of the wax paper. 7 dozen, she said, just like I thought we'd get from what we whipped up. She started nibbling another cookie, and Basilio picked up the phone and called for a cab. "Where we going, hon?" "Falston," he said. "Falston," said Lola, happy to take a ride. "Wait till they get a load of us." The cab honked, and they walked out the front door. Lola with 1 tin and Basilio behind her with 2 more. His sea bag lay empty on the kitchen floor. The cold was sharp, and the late afternoon sky was heavy with the possibility of snow. "I dreamt the bottle cap factory was on fire," she said, as they got into the cab. "That cork burned for a week when we was kids. We didn't think they'd ever put it out." "It's going to be new again," said Basilio, telling the cabbie to ride by the factory on his way out of the neighborhood. "Just like the old American Can building over in Canton." "Canton, sure, over in Canton everything's new. But not here," said Lola. "I'm just saying, Aunt Lowell, hold on to your house. It's going to be worth a lot of money one day." "Where the hell am I going to go?" she said, a month away from her 75th birthday. "When I go, I'm going straight from here to Zanino's." The cab turned for the interstate, then traveled over the river and through the woods, pizzelles warming Lola's lap through the bottom of the tin.
Rafael Alvarez reading his story, Aunt Lola, Christmas tradition here on WIPR since 2005. Rafael Alvarez has a new book that's just been released. It's called Crabtown USA. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning for all the details. Merry Christmas. Thanks for tuning in to Maryland Morning on this Christmas morning. Coming up a little later in the program, Kafi Garris from Reservoir Hill joins me to talk about how her family celebrates Kwanzaa, which begins tomorrow. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
Is there an issue that you'd like to see us cover? Let us know. You can email us at mdmorning@wypr.org, or you can leave us a voicemail. Just call 410-881-3162. Visit us on the web to leave comments or to hear previous episodes. That's all at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, on with the show.
On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. It's a special holiday edition of Maryland Morning. Thanks so much for spending part of your Christmas holiday with us. Tomorrow, the week-long celebration of Kwanzaa begins. Begun in 1966 by an African-American scholar named Maulana Karenga, it celebrates 7 core principles called Nguzo Saba. Joining me in the studio to tell us about how her family celebrates Kwanzaa is Kafi Garris. She and her husband Chase and their son Zaire live in Reservoir Hill. Merry Christmas and happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you. Same to you.
It's great to see you, Kafi. So you and I are neighbors in Reservoir Hill. We used to be next door neighbors.
That is right.
And Linnell and Miranda and I were invited to your house to celebrate Kwanzaa a few times, had a great time. You grew up celebrating Kwanzaa.
I did.
And, you know, so your parents, it sounds like, were very early adapters to this. This is a holiday that's less than than 50 years old.
Absolutely. It was started in 1966, and I was born in 1971. And we started celebrating Kwanzaa just around that same time that I was born.
Yeah.
So it is, it's a lifelong celebration for me.
Yeah, and you celebrate it every year.
Every year.
Now with your family. What does your celebration involve? How do you do that?
For us, it is, you know, really true to the celebration, and the intent of Kwanzaa is celebrating family, community, and the culture of the African-American people. And so for us, we, and since it's not a religious holiday, we do celebrate Christmas. You know, that for today is really important for us. And then we carry that same spirit over into the 26th tomorrow. And every night throughout the week, we set our table, our Kwanzaa table, and recite the principles and share and reflect on the principle of the day. And there are seven of those. So unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So each day we reflect on those principles. They are really, they're universal, and they are also principles that we really strive to live by year round. But during this time of year, it's really about recommitting to those principles. And, you know, with a son who is 8 years old, really helping him to come up and learn more about his culture and how important it is for him in his foundation.
Sure. And, of course, it's always at the end of the year.
Yes.
So, as you say, it's not a religious holiday, but it's a way of beginning the new year with a recognition of these principles that guide you throughout the year.
Absolutely. And so, you know, this the early part of the week is really about reflecting on, you know, the accomplishments and promises made and kept over the past year. And then we end on the first day of the new year, thinking forward.
And so Zaire, whom I've been a huge fan of, he was born, you know, when we were next door neighbors.
Yes.
He's a great little guy. He's at the Calvert School. How's his reaction now that he's, you know, he's not a little kid anymore.
Sure.
He's 8 years old. He's able to talk about the holiday. Does he look forward to it? Does he,
every
what's he
year.
Say to you about it?
He yeah. loves it. And, you know, as I guess kids do in general, every year, I think there's more meaning that is attributed to the holiday for him. He certainly knows it as a ritual, right? As anything that we do annually. He's expecting it. He's looking forward to it. But I really enjoy each year being able to expand his understanding of what it means. I mean, we don't speak in different language in any way with him or we haven't when he was younger. But each year we really do expand on the meaning of each principle and reflecting on what does that really mean in your life today at his age.
Let me ask you a logistical question. Are there Sure. gifts associated with Kwanzaa?
There are. And so those gifts are generally given to the children. Some give them on the 31st of the New Year, or the New Year's Eve celebration. Some give them on the first day of the year, which we do, the last day of Kwanzaa. And the idea is that they are cultural, some cultural reflection, so that it can be somewhat educational. It's also celebratory of the child. Sometimes, very often, they are handmade. Sometimes they are store-bought. But even if they're store-bought, they're really meant to be something related to encouraging the children to continue in their pursuits and continue in their education, continue in their creative expression of both culture and their individual.
And at least at your house, the Kwanzaa celebration involves not just your family, your immediate family, but a much wider family.
Yes.
I know Chase's family, your husband's family, many of them are located here. Many of your family are in Massachusetts. But lots of friends, lots of people. So it was always a big crowd and a lot of fun. And the kids, of course, just running around having a great time.
Yes. It is. It's something that actually when I was growing up, we have extended family that we celebrated with. And it used to be that actually every single night we would get together. We would rotate houses, do potluck dinners and celebrate together. Certainly as we've grown up and people have moved away and we are all dispersed, that doesn't happen as much. But we try to recreate that locally where I do live now. The first night of Kwanzaa Umoja Unity is definitely when we make sure that we include many, many more people than we would. So there's essentially a standing invitation to our house, which has been so even when I was growing up in Massachusetts. And then on Kuumba, creativity, the Karamu Feast is held, and that is New Year's Eve. And we also have a large crowd typically on that night as well. So it's really Even if we don't have a large crowd, we're always celebrating, even with our immediate nuclear family. But it's lovely, and we really enjoy having others to celebrate with us.
Yeah, well, you guys throw a great party anytime of
Thank
year.
Thank you.
Kwanzaa is always a lot of fun as well. Do you think there are some misconceptions among not just non-African Americans, but even people in the African American community about what it means and what's involved in celebrating?
There are. I think one of the reasons why there's misperception is because it is a relatively newer holiday. You know, 1966, although it's not super recent, it is still relatively recent relative to many other holidays that we're familiar with, like Christmas, like Hanukkah. Also, because the celebration, although it is meant to be about family and culture, like many others celebrations, it can become, in some circles, more commercial. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you put those things together, the relative newness of it and then the commercial aspect of this time of year, that some people feel like it's more of a flavor of the month. Having celebrated it for so long in my life, I really have been living these principles. It's been so important to me as a time to really reflect and celebrate our culture and history, that I do hope that people can have a greater appreciation for the importance of coming together in unity, coming together for cooperative economics, coming together in a shared purpose. And so that's why, one of the reasons why I love sharing about Kwanzaa, not just, you know, to evangelize it so much, but it really to share in the importance of that
And never has it been more important at this time in our world and in this time in our city. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming over and talking about it. Merry Christmas and Happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you. Same to you.
Kathy Garris. She and her family will celebrate Kwanzaa in their Reservoir Hill home beginning tomorrow. The Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture holds their annual Kwanzaa celebration on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. There'll be a showcase of contemporary African fashion, a performance by the fantastic Sankofa Dance Theater, and storytelling by one of the greats, Maria Broom. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for this special edition of Maryland Morning. Next week, we'll be revisiting some of the stories that we shared with you in 2015, and we hope you'll join us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday throughout the new year. Thanks so much for your support and your interest since we launched this program 10 years ago. And thanks in particular for sticking with WIPR these last few months when we've shuffled the hosting duties on Maryland Morning and Midday. I'm grateful to you for listening, and I'm grateful to my team here at Maryland Morning, Nathan Sterner, Rob Sivak, Jonna McCone, Kathleen Cahill, and Scott Seiss. Thanks to Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville for keeping us Java-ized throughout the year. Check them out at zekescoffee.com. And thanks to Austin Coughlin and our great friends at Clean Cuts Music for our theme song, which still has that shiny new theme song smell, doesn't it? We're grateful to everybody who makes this program possible in all the many ways that possibility happens. From all of us at Maryland Morning, we wish you joy and peace in this holiday season. I'm Tom Hall. Merry Christmas.